About the liberation of the jiva, okay.
There are four types of liberation which I mentioned, which are accepted by the devotees, who accept the same form of the Lord, the openness of the Lord, etc. And the question is, if some jiva attains some of these kinds of liberation, it doesn't mean that it won't have the personal association of the Lord, or won't have the seal of work.
I don't quite understand.
And for example, one of these forms is to have the same form.
Yes.
And to have the personal association of the Lord. And if one jiva attains this kind of perfection, another attains another liberation, doesn't mean that he will never be in the association of the Lord or have the similar form of the Lord.
Why are you worried?
No, I'm just...
It's just a question. I mean, see, in Vaikuntha, you have those who have the same form. That same forearm form looks like Vishnu. The only difference is the Srivatsa. He has the Srivatsa, they don't. That's how you tell the difference. But there are also those who are there with all kinds of forms, you know, like Hanuman and all these other kind of forms. You know, they have all kinds of far out, you know, forms and that. And so they don't have that kind of liberation. It's not their interest. You know, they may come and visit and be there and get association. It's not get association with this Lord, it's live on the same planet. Salokya means live in. So they come and visit there. They live somewhere else, they come and visit. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yes.
Maharaj, the other is that it is often explained that, like in paragraphs, that when the jiva leaves the body in the holy dham, he will go back to Kali. So if I understood properly, the jiva's first appearance is in the holy dham, in Koku. So could you kindly explain how to put these two things together? Because it seems that jiva can get other destinations than going back to Kali after his first appearance in.
But you're saying that going to Gokul is other than going back to Godhead, or?
After that, that's.
So when you say you're going back to Godhead, it's just like you say, yeah, you get on this bus and you'll get to Calcutta. It doesn't mean that there you won't go through Krishnagar, Ranagat, and all these different places. So the point is that you go back to Godhead, but unless you've already perfected yourself in Gokul through meditation, then you'll go there and then physically, you know, like I was saying before, you have Sarup, that Sarup, how you say, Siddhi and Vastu Siddhi. So generally speaking, what happens is people elevate themselves, then after leaving the body, then they appear in Gokul, and then at that point, then they're Sarup. So, but because that's all they have, then it's Vastu Siddhi. Then having that, then they're going to go through the stages of coming to the point of pure unalloyed devotion. Right? Because that's the beginning stage of bhava. So they'll go through the five stages of bhava and come to prema. Right? So now if someone is very fortunate and so they already have gotten to bhava while they're still within this body, then in that sarup by meditation, because that'll be sarup siddhi, not vastu siddhi. So then they will then go through these five stages through meditation. So if they have gotten only through part of, not all five, then they'll, after leaving this body, take birth in Gokul and continue where they left off, right? And then finish and get up, finish the five and come to prema. If someone has gotten through all those five stages in meditation, then when they leave this body, then they go straight to Goloka because they've already done the work that needs to be done in Gokul. But Prabhupada mentions that is very rare, right? right? So we understand it's rare someone goes to Gokul. So he's saying within those, it's very rare that this happens. So the general trend is that someone will leave this body and go to Gokul. Then in the association of the Nitya Siddhas, one will perfect, you know, come to the platform of love of God, and then in that way go to Goloka. But still that Gokul is still back to Godhead. Like that, because the residents of Goloka don't see a difference. We see the difference, right? But they don't see the difference. They just see it as higher and lower. You know, in other words, the pastimes in Goloka, the same pastimes in Gokul. Like that. They just see it as two different places. Like, you know, we perform the drama here and then we perform it over at the temple. So for them it's the same drama. You know, we see it, oh, that's the temple drama and that's the Gurukul drama, but they don't see like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that element becomes confusing much of the time, because when we hear back to Godhead, in our mind that means Goloka, because that's what you're going to get anyway. So if you're going to be eternally in Goloka and there's only one lifetime in Gokul, right? So you just count, you know, it's all, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, so that little bit isn't a problem. Right? Because you're with Krishna, you're in the association of the eternal associates. So it's not it's the same experience as if you're in Goloka. There's no difference in experience. Also, in there, as we remember, is that when he's saying, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying about the jiva in the tatastha position, then if he shows a little inclination towards Krishna, then he comes under the shelter of the internal potency, which gives him strength. So that's what's going on. That process means you're getting the association of those devotees who are in the internal potency. So since one's already made one's choice and one's going in that direction, therefore when one comes into Gokul, one just continues in that way. One is not acting in any more a tatastha capacity. Like that. So you're acting like the iron and fire. So the jiva is then in the fire of the internal potency. And so then that's the direction it goes. So that's the natural development of the living entity. Is that okay? Something else on this? No? So chapter 9. So the thesis on this chapter. The material world and the jiva are simultaneously different and non-different from the Lord. Beta, beta. Okay, so that's the how do you say? What do we call the opening of your chapter? Yes, so that's the pratigya. Okay. On studying the Vedas and Vedanta, the acharyas have come to two different conclusions. On the basis of the conclusions of Dattatreya, Ashtavakra, Durvasa, and other rishis, Shankaracharya preached the philosophy of absolute monism. That is one type of conclusion. On the other hand, following the footsteps of Narada, Prahlad, Dhruva, Manu, and others, the Vaishnavas have preached the philosophy of pure bhakti. That is the second type of conclusion reached from studying the scriptures. Right? Because we're talking about conclusion. So conclusion, that is Vedanta. Right? It means the end. Conclusion is the end. So then this conclusion then has two forms, impersonal and personal. Right? Anything else is not a conclusion. Right? You're dealing with what do you call it? Purva Mimamsa, Patanjali, Nyaya. You know, Vaisheshika, these things, you're not dealing with conclusion, right? So conclusion is Vedanta. So then in that, you end up with two kinds. There are four types of bhakti philosophy. Ramanuja preached Vishishta Dvaita. Madhvacharya preached Shuddha Dvaita. Nimbarka preached Dvaita Advaita, and Vishnu Swami preached Shuddha Advaita. Okay, so we call it Dvait, so Shuddha Dvait, Shuddha Dvaita. That's interesting. Got the difference there. They are preachers of pure bhakti. You know, in other words, Madhvacharya, it means pure dvaitism. There's no, on any way, shape, or form, anything that's one. Right? He doesn't agree to anything that's one. Right? It's all two. Right? So therefore, shuddha dvaita. Right? But you have vishishta dvaita, and vishuddha dvaita means purified oneness or special oneness. Right? So shuddha dvaita, purified oneness. Vishishta dvaita means special oneness. You're saying it's one, but it's one in that it's oneness of purpose, or oneness of the mood, or oneness of, you know, performing the pastimes, or that kind of a thing. So that what they're meaning is it's personal and there's two people, but not wanting to get anything that smells like one. Then Madhvacharya just says everything is two. So there's no discussion of one at all. Like that. So therefore, shuddha dvaita, right? Pure dvaitism. According to Ramanuja, there is only one reality, the Lord, Advaita, who is qualified vishishta by chit and achit. According to Madhvacharya, because that means there's one reality, the Lord, right? That's special. And then it's qualified, means there's chit and achit. So these expansions, then you have the chit, means the living entity, the spiritual world, all the spiritual living entities, and achit, the material energy. So it means that one Lord, he has these aspects, right, in which he interacts. So then, yeah. According to Madhvacharya, the jiva is a reality or entity distinct from the Lord, dvaita, but has a nature of devotion to the Lord. Right? So he focuses on that. Right, the one is Ramanuja's focusing on the Lord, you know, that he is everything, and then within that everything, then there's divisions. Right, so therefore the Advaita as this Vishishta Dvaita. Madhvacharya then is saying that there is the jiva, he is separate from the Lord, but he's eternally that way, never will be otherwise, but he has the nature to serve the Lord. Right? So he focuses on that. He doesn't focus on that other aspect, how Krishna is everything and like that. According to Nimbarka, so that is Shuddha Dvaita, the jiva is simultaneously different and non-different from the Lord, Dvaita Dvaita, but he accepts the concept of eternal difference of jiva and the Lord. So they're different, so eternally separate, but at the same time they're non-different because the soul is Satchitananda. And the Lord is Satchitananda, right? But at the same time, they're different because the jiva is small and he is, you know, how you say, eternally in that position. And the Lord is unlimited and he's eternally like that. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like the example of the drop of water in the ocean or the, you know, piece of gold in the gold mine. So he's emphasizing those aspects. That there's non-difference, but at the same time there's eternally different. So that difference there, I mean, that being the same then makes it, because unless there's some similarity, how are you friends? Right? You can't be friends unless there's something common. So the soul and the Lord are common in that they are because they're non-different. But at the same time is you can only have friendship between two things that are different. So they simultaneously have to be different from each other and similar. Yes.
So is it then in the qualities they are the same, and then
in quantities is different, yes. Yeah, quality same, but quantity different. Like that. Plus, because Krishna is unlimited, he can have qualities that the jiva doesn't have. Jiva is only so big, so there's only so many qualities you can have. He's unlimited, so there's unlimited qualities. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So depending upon what they're doing, because he's great, he's everything, therefore we surrender to him, we serve him. Right? That's Ramanuja. The other is there's the Lord, there's the living entity. So there's not going to be any Mayavad here. You know, there's just the Lord, the jiva, and service to God. There's no impersonal. So he's trying to defeat the impersonalist. This dvaita advaita is that they're simultaneously one and different. I mean, not simultaneously. They're one and different in that the jiva is non-different from the Lord in quality, but he's different eternally quantity. So therefore, relationship or rasa is the emphasis. Does Does that make sense? According to Vishnu Swami, though there is only one substance, Advaita, there are still eternal states of difference in the form of Brahman and Jiva. Okay. Yeah, so it's same like Ramanuja, but he is emphasizing, he's bringing out the thing of the Lord and the Jiva rather than the Lord and his creation. Right? Some say that the reason that Ramanuja preaches what he, how he preaches, is because of his particular perspective, right? Seeing that he is an expansion of Ananta, which is Sesha. So then, you know, he is gone different from, he is the Lord, right? So then he sees it like that. It means Sesha Nag is the same as the Lord at the same time. That difference, so he sees it from that perspective, that Krishna is everything and all like that. Does that make sense? Well, this other Vishuddha Dwaita is that they are, how do I say? Well, there's only one substance. It's the same like Ramanuja, but he emphasizes the element of the Jiva as opposed to the creation. Because Ananta is the one who actually is the creation and makes everything, enters into everything and all that. Does that make sense? Right? Just that slight difference in mood. Like that. Though there are differences amongst the philosophies, all the Vaishnava acharyas have accepted the eternal nature of bhakti, Bhagavan, the jiva's eternal servitorship, and the goal of prema. They are true Vaishnavas. But though they are all Vaishnavas, their realizations, being slightly different for each other, are partial or imperfect. When Mahaprabhu appeared, he removed incompleteness from these realizations and, I guess, taught the world the pure science, the highest truth of pure bhakti. Okay, then this is a quote from... Okay, so these are quotes from Madhya Leela now. In his Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadeva has described that everything is but a transformation of the energy of the Lord. Shankaracharya, however, has misled the world by commenting that Vyasadeva was mistaken. Thus he has raised great opposition to theism throughout the entire world. According to Shankaracharya, by accepting the theory of transformation of the energy of the Lord, one creates an illusion by indirectly accepting that the absolute truth is transformed. Transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily conception of the self that is an illusion. In other words, you just have the energy doing different things because they're trying to take the transformation as illusion because there's only one, you know, one reality. So how it could be anything else? But the thing is unless the absolute truth was somehow or another involved or allowing that, how did everything take place anyway? How would there be illusion? How could the jiva come under illusion? How could these things happen unless somehow or another the absolute truth was involved? Right? But they're taking it as completely separate things. That's why I said these philosophies are not quite complete. But the Vaishnava ones, it's complete in that it will get you love of God, it will get you to Vaikuntha. Like that. But, yeah. But here the Shankara, then they don't understand is this transformed. It's like one's turning into the other. But it's still coming from the same source. So therefore you get your... simultaneously one and different. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is opulent in all respects. Therefore, by his inconceivable energies, he has transformed the material cosmic manifestation. Using the example of a touchstone, which by his energy turns iron to gold, and yet remains the same, we can understand that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead transforms his innumerable energies, he remains unchanged. Although touchstone produces many varieties of valuable jewels, it nevertheless remains the same. It does not change its original form. Brahman, who is greater than the greatest, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is full of six opulences, and therefore he is the reservoir of ultimate truth and absolute knowledge. When we speak of the Supreme as impersonal, we deny his spiritual potencies. Logically, if you accept half of the truth, you cannot understand the whole. Right, so so this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 7, 121 to 186, 138 and 140. Right, so he's saying is if you only accept part of it, he means the Brahman aspect, but not that there are potencies, then you're only accepting half the truth. So what will you understand? You can't understand the complete truth. Right, so that's the difficulty. Mayavadis cannot understand the complete whole because they don't accept that there are potencies. They just say it's one undistinguished Brahman. But the point is Brahman, see, because they're trying to take it that distinguishing features mean it's material. They cannot acknowledge the point that spiritual can have variety. That's a problem for them. Right? So if they accept that, then you can accept that Brahman has different manifestations. But it's still transcendental. But that's somehow or another overwhelming to them, because they only know that if it has form, it's material. They don't understand spiritual. So not accepting those qualities, they can't see like this. So then they get cheated. Then further quote, the personal features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are categorized in three cases, namely ablative, instrumental, and locative. Are you describing as formless that Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is complete in six transcendental opulences? That was Madhya Lila 6, 140, 4, and 152. Okay. I'm just going to get into the three cases, ablative, instrumental, and locative. So ablative is the cause, that I understand. So it means he's the cause of everything. He's also then the field of action, right? And then his instrumental is what will be used, right? This is when we're discussing the second canto. This is what we're technically looking at, is these aspects, is that the Lord is, how do you say? He's the cause of all causes. Right, so that's the ablative. The locative means the place that's there, the field of activities, like that. He is the cause of that. In other words, whatever you see, that has been manifest from Krishna. Right? And the potency in it that's actually getting everything done, that is also coming from him. And the jivas who take part in that and therefore make it all happen are also coming from him. Does this make sense? Vedavyasa in the Vedanta Sutras has taught Parinamavad, transformation, not Vivartavad, illusion. Right, so it's transformed. There's the Lord, and it's transformed into all these other manifestations. They take it Vivartavad, there's only one absolute truth, it's become covered by illusion. Therefore you can't see it. There are no transformations. There's only the one absolute truth. It's just covered by illusion. And so if you remove the illusion, then again, it's all just the absolute truth. But the point is what they can't explain is, where did that illusion come from if there's only one undesignated absolute? Right? So even though they're smart, they're not smart enough. Like that. Okay, so this is it. Parinamavad, that's our philosophy. Vivartavad, that's their philosophy. But Shankaracharya claiming that in Parinamavad, the Lord becomes subject to change, changed the meaning of the sutras and established Vivartavad. The meaning of the words Parinama and Vivarta are given in the Vedanta Sar, written by Sadananda Yogindra, 59th verse. The perception of a different object when a real object takes another form is called Parinamavad. The perception of a different object when there is actually no different object is called Vivarta. Parinama is transformation of object. The example is the formation of yogurt from milk. An example of vivartavad is mistaking a rope for a snake. Does that make sense? So the milk does transform into yogurt. So the two are realities. The other is that you have a rope, but you think it's a snake. So that's the illusion. So they're thinking you're generating, but how is it that one, there's a jiva that could be generating this illusion? Or if it's generated from somewhere else that he's falling under, where did that come from? Because right there you still have three. You have the Lord, you have the jiva, and you have this illusion. But they're saying that there's only one. So if there is only one, where did all this come from? And if they say it's all pastime, then if it is pastime, why do you have to get out of it? Why is there a need of sadhana? Why is that? So they say, well, that's also a pastime, but then you can also be the pastime of staying here. Why do you have to leave? If it's all just pastime anyway. And if it's all just the one reality, the indistinguishable, why would there be need of pastime anyway? Right? If having no variation is perfect and wonderful, then why would there be a need for variation? Does that make sense? So these are problems in their philosophy. Taking these definitions, the followers of Shankaracharya say that the jiva and the material world can never be a transformation of the Lord. If one accepts such a transformation of the Lord, it must be considered a perverted state of the Lord. As yogurt is a perverted state of milk, one must say that the world is a perverted state of the Lord. Therefore, they say that parinama is not acceptable. If out of ignorance a person accepts a rope as a snake, from that mistake many difficulties arrive. They claim the perception of the material world is similar to this. The world does not exist. Out of ignorance, that which is perceived as worldly is actually an illusion, vivarta. By accepting this proposition, the Lord is not subject to change or transformation. By such reasoning, the theory of vivarta is established. So they can't deal that there's spiritual variety. They just are unable to handle that. So therefore, they simply want to say that the material world doesn't exist. If that's there, then them sitting there and saying all this doesn't exist either. So it's as much an illusion as something else, because they're also using words, they're using this and that. So there's no such thing as transcendental existence, and then a non-transcendental existence. Then where did it come from? Right? And if there's no variety, where did all the words in the language come from? You know. So like this, then it's. There's many problems in there, but it was meant to bewilder the atheists, so, you know, that was its purpose anyway, and it's done a good job. Mahaprabhu's teaching is as follows. There is no substance to the theory of vivartavad. Thinking the material body to be the self is comparable to the mistaking a rope for a snake. That is vivarta. However, the material body is not false, and to claim that the Lord, through illusion or vivarta, becomes the material body and the material world, that the Lord falls under the illusion of thinking he's a jiva, is a detestable belief. So they're not willing to say that the Lord or the absolute truth has transformed, but they're willing to say he's come under illusion. Right? So they're saying, you know, that's unacceptable how the Lord can be transforming, but how does he come under illusion? That's worse. Right? So this is a problem here. So he's saying is that, we're saying is that the material body, that the jiva thinks he is the material body, that's illusion. But the body itself exists. Does that make sense? So it's that we identify with it, and what we consider its uniqueness that we therefore identify with it, that's the illusion. It's not that the body itself doesn't exist. It does exist. Does that make sense? So by transformation means all these different manifestations are there, expanding from the Lord. But if we identify with them, other than being a servant of the Lord, then that's illusion. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah? Okay, so.
Do they see the difference between the body and the soul?
Do they see? Yes, they see the difference between the body and the soul.
Because here is the one phrase, thinking the material body to be the self is comparable to the mistake in the rope phrase.
Yeah, because they're saying that that's what's going on. They say that, you know, the body and the self are different, but you think they're the same. So that's the illusion. But saying that, then that means the body disappears, because it's not real. So all that's left is the soul, which then is then situated in transcendence. Right? But the point is when the soul understands it's not the body, and it's Brahman, the body still exists. That they have problems with. You know, therefore, you have these great personalities that can function within a body, but not think they are it, are the body. Yeah? Parinama is accepted in the Vedanta Sutras of Vyas. By rejecting Parinama, one admits that all knowledgeable Vyas is mistaken. Just as milk transforms into yogurt, the Lord's inconceivable energy by his word, wish, is transformed into the jiva and the material world. There is no transformation of the Lord or Brahman. What is transformed through the influence of the Lord's variegated inconceivable energies can never make the Lord the object of transformation. In other words, he transforms and creates all this, but he himself is never transformed. Right? Krishna says everything is coming from him, but he is still separate from that. Just like the example of the touchstone. The touchstone touches, you know, iron and makes so much gold, but it's still separate from all that iron and that gold. It doesn't. So when he's saying that Vyasadeva is wrong on the Parinamavad, so they accept that Vyasadeva's saying that, but he's saying it's wrong. But then if you say the Acharya is wrong, what position does that put you in? Right? Because their position anyway, when you get up to a particular point, you become God anyway, so you don't need the Acharya. Right? So that's their position anyway. So they do have a little bit of a cultural problem here. Like that. Though a material example cannot fully represent a spiritual matters, by accepting an example, one can clarify a spiritual topic. Thus it is stated that touchstone, though producing piles of jewels, remains unchanged. On the spiritual level, one can think of the Lord's creations in the same way. Though creating unlimited jivas and unlimited universes by his inconceivable energy, just by his will, the Supreme Lord remains without change. So it's important to understand is that an example will not fully illustrate, fully give, because it's only an example. It's something to bring you close to what it is you're trying to illuminate the topic. Just like the light is there illuminating, you know, the book, it doesn't mean the light's become the book. Right? It's just there to illuminate. It's different. So it brings one close to get an idea. So that's why it's always important that when one is trying to understand something in that, then one's looking at what is the purpose of the example rather than specifically the example itself. Right? Because the example is to carry something. You know? Does that make sense? You know, the boy gives, you know, flowers to the girl. She doesn't look at, you know, the quality of the flower and this and that. And, oh, hey, this one, there's a bug ate this leaf here. And that wasn't the point. He wasn't trying for perfection in the flower he gave. He should have, of course, but having, you know, missed that point, it still is the thought that counts. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. One should not think the words without change make the Lord impersonal. Absolutely without quality. Make the Lord impersonal, absolutely without quality. The Absolute Truth is endowed with the six opulences in full as Bhagavan. By claiming the Lord is absolutely without qualities, one is claiming he is without spiritual energies. However, by his inconceivable energies, the Lord is eternally endowed with qualities as well as being devoid of qualities. To claim absolute absence of qualities is acceptance of only half of the Lord's form. By this, one is destroying his completeness. Oh, now he's going to get into this, okay, about the grammatical explanation. Okay. So when we say the Lord's without change, that doesn't mean that he's without qualities. So when we say the Lord and all his energies are non-different, he's non-dual, it doesn't mean that he's still not separate from them. Right? Does that make sense? So what's happening here, as we can see, is that there's a problem coming up. How to resolve that hasn't been addressed by Shankaracharya or the four acharyas, the Vaishnava acharyas. Does that make sense? Is that simultaneously contradictory things are going to be happening at once. Right? So we can see he's coming to that. Okay, so if you accept that he has no, that means he has qualities, at the same time he doesn't. So it means he has no material qualities, he only has spiritual. When you say the Lord has no qualities, it's a fact, but that's no material quality. So you're only accepting half of the Lord. Right? So you're not getting the complete package. So that's a difficulty. Right here he says you're destroying his completeness, because he can simultaneously have qualities and not have them. The three ways in which, does that make sense? Like that? So in always, qualities means it's always the spiritual, the transcendental. No qualities, or he does nothing, or all this is referring to the material. Right? When it's talking about what he does, wonderful, that's always the spiritual. And what it talks about, he doesn't have or he doesn't do, that's talking about the material. The three ways in which the Lord is the cause, ablative, instrumental, locative, from whom, by whom, and in whom everything exists, is explained in the Shruti. Ablative, instrumental, from whom, ablative, by whom, instrumental, and in whom everything exists. Okay, this is Taittiriya Upanishad. Oh, Yatova imani bhutani jayante. You got to that part yet? Yena jatani jivanti. Yeah.
Why wouldn't they use the purpose of this difference? Speaking about the different cases, so why they use the instrumental?
Well, that's what we're going to explain here. Because the point is all the cases are the Lord. When we're talking rasa, then we're talking about him as the subject, right? And the devotee is the object. And then the other devotees is instrumental in between this. So that's in rasa. Here we're talking tattva, because it said here, from whom, by whom, and in whom everything exists. Right? Because the instrumental means that they're the ones, so it's through who's doing. So the Lord, he approves what's going on in the world, so through him everything happens, but he's not the one, he's not the doer. The jiva's the doer. So he's only instrumental in it. Does that make sense? So the living entity in the material world, in his activities, right? The jiva is the subject. Right? The Lord becomes the instrumental. Right? But in the spiritual platform, then the Lord is the subject, and the jiva is the instrumental. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the... Yeah? Inquire about the Brahman, from whom everything is born, by whom everything is sustained, and into whom everything enters. Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1. Oh, I see, this is Bhrigu-vala, you haven't done it. From whom all beings are born, describes the Lord in his ablative function. Right? Ablative means the cause, where it's come from, its origin, like that. By whom all beings continue to live, describes the Lord in his instrumental function. Right, because they're going on, life is happening, activity is going on, because the Lord is assisting. It's his potencies that make it all happen, because the jiva just sits there. Right? But he thinks he's doing it. Right? We think, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing so many things, and we're actually not doing anything other than desiring to do them. And then the Lord arranges through his energies to get it done. So that way the Lord's instrumental. Right, because he's doing the activity. Like Krishna wants something done. He wants to send a message, you know, to his devotees. So therefore, the devotee, another devotee, takes that. So that other devotee is the instrument in getting it done. But Krishna is sending a message. That's what's happening. But the devotee is the one carrying that message, so they're the instrument, right? So the jiva is desiring to do these activities in the material sphere. Krishna then, through his potencies and the three modes of nature, actually effect it. So he's the instrument for that. Does that make sense? Because he's not doing it. The jiva's doing it. Like, the messenger is not the one taking the message. They're the instrument. The message is being sent by the person who's sending the message. Right? They're just the messenger. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
We can also actually see this as somewhat abhidhaya prajana. By whom all being continues to live.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, because everything will be broken into these three. You know, just like we take the subjective, the instrumental and the objective. And you could say that's sambandhavidaya prayojana, like that. So it means those principles of sambandhavidaya prayojana will always be there. Then it's a matter of seeing how these things fit into that, for that perspective. So yes, they would fit like that.
Why do certain things work in the material world? Let's say.
Why do they work?
What is that active principle? Like, let's say, for example, you switch on a laptop. What is it that makes it work?
What makes it work?
Yeah.
What makes the laptop work?
Yeah, anything, or the airplane fly, or the house.
Means it's working through, what is it? It means you have many things that are working. You're working through fire is one of the things you're working on. Mostly modern man sticks to fire a lot. Right?
Fire.
Yeah, electricity is fire, right? Your car is running by fire, your airplane is flying by fire, right? Unless it's being shot by a large rubber band, but other than that, then mostly it's working by fire. So it's just transformation of that energy. So that potency then is Krishna's potency. Now what it does, it transforms you, it transports you from one place to another, or in this way then it's able to carry information. You know, like language or that. So then it's there. In other words, it's an element of language, right? You're working on the binary language there, but it transforms it into a language that you can understand. But otherwise it's functioning. It's still working on a language principle that is running by fire. Does that make sense?
That's it.
Well, you want something, something else or something? Or?
No, I was wondering.
You wonder why you didn't think of that and why you're not the billionaire or something?
No, I was wondering how we can see Krishna in those things.
Where does fire come from? Where does electricity come from? Where does knowledge come from? Where does language come from? You understand?
Yeah.
There's
no miracle like or something mystic about it.
Miracle? What? So it means... The miracle is how the conditioned soul, who really likes it here, comes in contact with the devotees and decides to go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. What miracle are you looking for?
Just
anything in particular? Or?
No, I was just wondering because... Yeah.
Everything is a miracle. Prabhupada mentions this as it's Krishna's mystic potency. Trees, they eat through their feet. Right? What keeps a tree standing up? Roots. And it eats through the roots. Right? So this is Krishna's mystic power. The trees eat through their feet. You know, so stuff like that. So everything about it is all mystical. But the point is that there's no mystique because it's Krishna, Krishna's potencies. So there's nothing that, in other words, there's nothing there to create an illusion. The more one understands this, the less one is in illusion. And the less one understands this, the more one is covered by illusion. Okay, so we'll end here then. We'll continue then tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
John. Notice that the lights don't work. Those back lights. Appears that they're not necessarily working.